Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. You made it to Friday. It's the 26th day of July 2019. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host, and this is the Daily Daily Caller Podcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for rating and reviewing on iTunes and all that good stuff. This show is only worth doing because you guys listen to it. So thank you for that. We've got a lot of stuff to do. The winners of the signed Kayleigh McEnany books will be drawn. Well, they were drawn yesterday, but they will be announced by Charlie Hurt later on in the program. So, yes, I guess I just let the cat out of the bag. This week's guest is Charlie Hurt, and we got some signed copies of his book, But Don't Enter. Don't Enter. I've got to catch up. We're still doing the Carrie Severino, Molly Hemingway signed copies of Justice on Trial. That's the problem with recording early. That recording on Monday with Hemingway and Severino screwed up the whole thing. Damn it. No, but you guys are still entering on that one, so we're going to save the Charlie Hurt books for a bit. But buy it. Check it out. You buy it. When we do open it up and you send me a copy of your receipt with your email entry, you get entered twice. That's it. It's that simple. I can't be bribed, but I can be bought. But nobody's offered to buy me yet, so damn it. Actually, bribe and bought would be the same thing. Never mind. Forget it. Some people do try to butter me up, and that's not going to work because I don't believe it. I know what you're doing. Anyway, we got a lot of stuff to get to. You can email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. I've been going through my emails. If I haven't gotten to yours yet, I will. You'll get a notification that you're entered in the drawing. If you've entered, you're entered, and you were in the drawing today or yesterday. I'm so ready for the weekend. Can you tell? But before we get there, we do have things to discuss. I want to talk about the fallout and the media reaction and the attempted turd polishing. I love the saying you can't polish a turd, but that doesn't stop people from trying to do it. It's really true. If you have time this weekend, find a turd and try and polish it. It doesn't stop the media from trying to do it. They know that their dreams, their narrative, and their remaining shreds of credibility are in a tailspin, a nosedive. It is just about to pull the plug on this whole thing. So they need to try to rehabilitate what they've told their audiences was a foregone conclusion. Donald Trump is done. He's done for. He's going to be impeached. That is it. Russian collusion, obstruction of justice. And after the Mueller hearing, no rational human being could come away with that impression. After the Mueller report, no rational human being could come away with that impression. But we're not dealing with rational human beings. We're dealing with desperate human beings. And in desperation, human beings will do anything. Anything. I mean, everybody remembers that movie about the plane crash in the Andes where the soccer players ate their dead comrades. Not judging them, but still. So the desperation has fully begun. But first, before you have to reach bottom before you can realize what's going on. And the person who pointed this out perfectly, I'm not sure he intended to do this, was Jeffrey Toobin over on CNN. I know we've only got about a half a show, but I got a lot of audio I want to play for you. Jeffrey Toobin, the legal analyst, he wrote the book about the People versus O.J. Simpson that really, really excellent miniseries was based on. And he had enough. he made an observation that I don't think you're supposed to make, that you're allowed to make on CNN. And he got a couple of amens out of it as well. That after all this Democrats investigation, they haven't found anything. Now, again, a rational person would then say that maybe, just maybe, there's nothing there. If you're drilling for oil or gas or whatever, gold, and you start digging. At a certain point, you kind of have to go, if there's nothing there, there's nothing there. But Democrats, no, they're going to China. They're going to start, once they hit magma, they'll think that they're really onto something. And if they just dig deeper and dig harder. Toobin basically says, all these investigations, you haven't found anything. You haven't nailed him yet. Now he's saying it out of exasperation. He can't believe you. What do you mean you can't find anything? But he's revealing an accidental truth, which seems to be the only way the truth ever shows up on CNN. Listen to this clip.
You know what might be a good idea for the Democrats in the House of Representatives is to find out something. You know, I mean, they got one control of the House of Representatives and they were going to do investigations. Name one thing that any of these investigations have uncovered. Now we're almost, you know, at the summer recess.
Where are the
now,
tapes? It,
you're like, well, like, what are they doing? I mean, the fact
well,
that
I mean,
they've
go,
been,
go Jeff, well, but, go Jeff, they, go Jeff.
You know, they have been stymied by the president.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
They've had run into unprecedented, interference from the press. But I mean, let's not kid ourselves. This has been a wall-to-wall failure in all these committees.
A wall-to-wall failure in all these committees. They've been digging and digging, and they just say, look, give me another 5 feet. Give me another 10 feet, coach. Don't stop now. You got to keep going. I know that. I can feel it in my bones. There's something down there. There has to be a point, and there usually is, when dealing with rational human beings where you cut bait. But we are not dealing with rational human beings. They are not about to cut bait. They are convinced that they will be able to fool enough people if they just investigate harder. They've looked. They've looked under every rock, and they haven't found anything. The special counsel looked under every rock and didn't find anything. But they think, well, there's got to be more rocks. There are more. We can go deeper and find more rocks, can't we? We can look under those rocks, those theoretical rocks that are deeper down. Keep digging. Keep shoveling. And they've adopted a new tactic in this that is insulting. It's condescending, but it's their true nature. It's the true nature of a progressive of any sort. It doesn't matter if they're a Republican or a Democrat. The progressive truly believes that they are our moral and intellectual betters. They truly believe that the world would be a better place if everybody just listened to them. Of course, they live usually, especially if they're in a position to espouse this to anybody other than their own brood of cats. They live in an incredibly insulated world of other progressives who also feel the same way. But it's okay. There's no conflict there because they also engage in massive groupthink. They all agree. Everybody just nods at the cocktail party and says, oh, yes, this is absolutely right. You are a genius. I am a genius for agreeing with you. We're geniuses because we agree we should rule everybody's life. And you end up with something like Obamacare, a one-size-fits-all plan dictated from a small town on the East Coast to the entire country. It's like issuing everybody the same size spandex, if spandex even come in sizes. Here's your spandex. It's one size fits all. Everybody can get into it. Maybe, although some people not so much. Other people wouldn't have enough to fill it out. It wouldn't look good. I mean, just think of the last trip you went to the mall and imagine everybody you saw there in spandex. There'd be some, maybe 10%, we'd go, I'd kind of like to see that person in spandex. But the rest of the country or the rest of the occupants of the mall at that time, more than likely you would not want to see them in spandex because that's insane. One size does not fit all. Yet they think they should be able to dictate terms of your life because you just keep making the wrong decisions. You make bad decisions. What's the matter with you? Why don't you listen to me? I know what it is. And it's never enough that they just give advice. If they just gave advice, they'd be your annoying in-law or neighbor or friend of a friend that you can't really be rude to because that's your friend's friend. But they want to use the power of government to force you to live the way they want you to live. They're not going to be subject to that. No, they couldn't possibly be. As I always say, the leaders of communist countries tend to be pretty fat. The people of North Korea are starving to death. Kim Jong-un hasn't missed too many meals, if you're looking at him. Stalin didn't go without. He was not standing in bread lines waiting for his daily rations. He was eating well and living large. Same with Fidel. Same, you name it. Maduro, right now in Venezuela. So the Democrats have adopted this attitude in the wake of the Mueller hearing disaster, the elder abuse that took place on Wednesday. I want to play a clip for you from Elijah Cummings. He is a Democratic congressman out of Baltimore. He was my congressman for 13 years. Only when I was a kid did I ever live in a Republican district. And my hometown has gotten even worse than it was then when it flipped to Democrat. Then I lived in Dearborn. That was John Dingell. Then I lived in Baltimore. Elijah Cummings. Now I think it's Jamie Raskin. Just one moron after another. Elijah Cummings is convinced that the reason the American people aren't clamoring for the head of Donald Trump, aren't demanding his immediate impeachment, is that they're just not paying attention. They're just not paying. You're too stupid. You're too distracted. Pay attention, please. He begs. There was a press conference after the Mueller hearing late in the evening where the Democratic leadership got together. And Elijah Cummings came up to the microphone and he begged people to pay attention. Begged people to pay attention. Now, if you're thinking about this rationally, him begging people to pay attention, implicit in that is they're ignorant, they're stupid, they're lazy, they don't care, they haven't been paying attention. But we have been paying attention. You can't escape this Russia hoax. You couldn't escape it for the past 3 years. The media everywhere, even if you don't watch news, it's woven into sitcoms and TV dramas and anything that goes, you just name it, and somehow they've managed to shoehorn a Donald Trump is a Russian troll theme into everything. I'm surprised that, you know, they don't make cookies with it written in chocolate chips on it. That's how pathetic they are and how sort of omnipresent they have made this narrative. And the American people aren't buying it. So Elijah Cummings comes out because they've been doing it on the sly. They've been doing it directly and loudly. Now they're doing it desperately. Listen to Elijah Cummings beg people to pay attention and basically capitulate to the Democrats.
And I'm begging the American people to pay attention to what is going on. Because if you want to have a democracy intact for your children and your children's children and generations yet unborn, we have got to guard this moment. This is our watch.
I'm begging you, please, for generations, children and generations not born, except for the ones that we, you know, gleefully abort and the ones that are born that we still, you know, post-birth abort. But the rest of you, the ones we decide are worthy of living. Pay attention, please. What are you doing? Elijah, we've been paying attention. We've heard it all. We've seen it all. It has been nonstop beaten into our skulls by Democrats in the media, in the entertainment industry, God, in our workplaces, everywhere we go. This has been drilled into our heads. And we've also looked into it and we smell the BS. We don't buy it. See, the one thing lacking from all of this is proof. That's kind of an important thing. I realize Democrats have really spent the last 2 years trying to make that an unfashionable concept. What do you want? Proof? That's ridiculous. Obviously, a 15-year-old Brett Kavanaugh was running a rape train, running rape parties, gang rape parties, when he was 15 years old back in 1980 or whatever year it was. It's obvious he did that. Why do I know that? Because somebody said it. We're supposed to just believe it, accept it at face value. Needless to say, remember the person who made those allegations, Julie Swetnick, has disappeared. She's not out there. If she was really a victim of these rape parties that she, for some weird reason, kept going to, You know, I didn't really appreciate being raped by those 15 guys, but the music was great, the conversation was awesome, and the punch was top-notch. So I'm going back to that rape party this week on the off chance that I won't get gang raped again. That's Julie Swetnick. She disappeared. Where are the follow-ups? Where is the media? Why isn't she screaming? Why isn't she, you know, at the Today Show outside the glass when they show the crowd banging on the glass demanding, don't you realize that there is a rapist on the Supreme Court? This injustice must not be able to stand. No, she's gone. She's disappeared. Her shyster lawyer has been charged with more felonies than most mob bosses, Michael Avenatti, and they've all just memory-holed them. Well, Elijah Cummings, well, Democratic leadership, we haven't memory-holed them. We remember all the times you cried wolf. We remember all the times that Adam Schiffhead went on television and said, there is evidence of collusion. There's clear evidence, and it's in plain sight. We've got the evidence of collusion. Well, if he had it, Wednesday's Mueller hearing would have been a hell of a time to drop it, right? Because you've got the guy there who theoretically would also have it. He's the one who spent 2 years and $25 million and a team of investigators and an army of FBI agents looking into every aspect of it. So as Adam Schiff sat there and listened to Robert Mueller have a senior moment, that would have been a pretty good time to bring up this evidence that he claims to have had. But he didn't do that. So is Adam Schiff committing obstruction of justice? Or, more likely, is Adam Schiff full of Schiff? Was he lying all along for political gain? Shockingly, Adam Schiff has not yet been asked this question in his multiple media appearances. It is unbelievable. Now, it's not just Democrats up on the Hill. It's Democrats in media who are very upset. It's the American people who are failing failing Robert Mueller. There was a segment on MSNBC. I'm not even kidding. I'm going to play it for you. Where they posited, based off a Jennifer Rubin column from the Washington Post, if you don't know who Jennifer Rubin is, imagine a bridge troll and then make that bridge troll less attractive and then double it. And you're about a third of the way there. She is the so-called conservative columnist at the Washington Post, Jennifer Rubin. She used to run the Right Turn blog. She might still run the Right Turn blog. But she wrote a column the other day, yesterday, entitled Mueller didn't let down the American people. The American people let down Robert Mueller. Not kidding. That's how pathetic these people are. Well, she set off this conversation. She wasn't involved in it, thankfully, because HDTV and Jennifer Rubin, not so much. Nicole Wallace and Richard Stengel have this conversation. It's very short. But I want to tell you who Richard Stengel is, because I think it's important and telling. Richard Stengel was, from 2006 through 2013, the managing editor of Time Magazine. So his so-called journalism bona fides are well established. You don't just, you know, your first job in journalism is not managing editor of anything. So especially of Time Magazine, back when, you know, people read Time Magazine. So he's a serious journalist. He's now an MSNBC analyst, which means he's otherwise unemployable. Him and Nicole Wallace have this conversation that it's our fault, and it's the media's fault. It's really, well, he blames it on the media that they didn't break down the Mueller report and the facts of the Russia investigation into bite-sized enough pieces for the American people, the dumb American people, me and you. We didn't make it simple enough, basic enough, so that the morons in this country could understand it. And that's really the biggest problem here. That's what's going on. Elijah Cummings begging you to pay attention because you're too stupid to know it. And now the gang over at MSNBC is saying that we have to break it up basically like a little baby bird. They have to be, the media has to be the mama bird. They got to chew up the Mueller report and just regurgitate it into our mouths in little tiny pieces so that we can understand it. Because we're too stupid to understand the larger context, the whole picture. We need just little bite-sized pieces. You think I'm exaggerating? I wish that I were. Here's the audio.
Our friend Jennifer Rubin has a piece in the Washington Post today that says Mueller didn't fail, the country did. You kind of started us in this vein, but I just want to go around quickly. I mean, you know, what Mueller did on the level of substance, what Mueller did on the level of fact pattern, what Mueller did in terms of the credibility of a man who obviously wasn't performing for any camera. He was simply doing what he was asked to do. He was subpoenaed. He didn't volunteer to go up there. And rendering every Trump lie about what the report says completely moot, destroyed, did not exonerate him. Certainly lending credence to the belief that Donald Trump was anyone other than the president. He would have been charged with not just one crime, but probably 10 acts of obstruction of justice. And illuminating this Russian threat. Your thoughts on how we process that information?
Well, I thought it was a powerful column, and it's the idea it wasn't Mueller's fault, it was ours. And part of that is, look, realistically, a 448-page report, it's hard for people to read. They're working. It's hard for anybody to read. Mm-hmm. We in the media didn't do a good enough job of summarizing it in a kind of a bite-sized way. It took us too long. The Democrats could have done the same thing. Like, why not get everything on a 3x5 card that we just say over and over and over? I mean, that's what you have to do. And the sorry thing is, we put everything on the shoulders of Bob Mueller, and he obviously is not a partisan, and he didn't want to be part of that.
Because if there's one thing that wasn't covered enough or explained enough or preached enough in the last 2 years, it was the Russia hoax, right? It was just, everybody was just kind of quiet about it. All the media did was say, hey, man, Russia tried to interfere with the election. Donald Trump was cool with it and moved on. They didn't explain anything. They didn't go in depth on it. There weren't documentaries made. Their local PBS stations didn't run, you know, specials on it. The NPR stations didn't go wall to wall with the coverage. MSNBC and CNN don't exist. It's just that we didn't get it out there, and we didn't get it out there, and we didn't dumb it down enough for the morons in this country, is what he's saying. And he's saying, man, why didn't we and the Democrats, as if there's a difference, sit there and really, really put down a 3x5 card so we could just hammer things home? If we could have just hammered the message home a little bit more, we would have made all the difference in the world. That's all they did, was hammer it home. You can only come up with this thought, these words, if you're writing satire, or, and it wouldn't sell because nobody would, like, satire's got to be somewhat based in truth, or you lived in a world where you rarely came across anybody who disagreed with you. Anybody who did any independent research or heard the other side at all during the Mueller investigation. You would have had to have never heard anything about Andrew Weissman. You would have never had to heard anything about the origins of the Steele dossier and how it was used to obtain a FISA warrant multiple times, even though it was unverified, even though the law enforcement officials in the Obama administration who used it to get that FISA warrant swore that it was verified information. You would have to not know that that Steele dossier was then leaked to a reporter, Michael Isikoff, and then the story that he subsequently wrote based on it was also used to back up the validity of the Steele dossier in obtaining the ability of the United States government to spy on an American citizen. You'd have to not know any of that. Of course, we do know that. We've all seen that. These people, maybe they don't know it. I suspect they do know it. They just don't want their audience to know it. Because if you do watch exclusively MSNBC and or CNN, God bless you. I'm sorry, and there's you did it to yourself. But there are people who do that. If you did just watch those networks, you would not know of those things. Occasionally, not on MSNBC so much, but on CNN, there would be somebody who would bring this up, the token conservative, on a panel of like eight people, and they would immediately be shot down. They would be treated like Julie Swetnick claimed she was treated at Brett Kavanaugh's parties. They would all have just ganged up and piled up on that person, and they likely would not be booked on CNN again. Ask Jeffrey Lord how his tenure at CNN worked out. But the idea that Democrats are now selling, look, you're just too stupid. The people are too stupid. They don't get what's right in front of them. I don't understand it. If only we could have given it to them in smaller portions. They're not done. They're still going to try and chew it up a little bit smaller and spit it into our mouths. But the reality is we have heard it. We've heard all of it. I love the condescension. Nobody can read 448 pages. My God. Yeah, no, nobody reads books anymore. They just sell millions of copies every year. And the people that you're holding in contempt, maybe, you know, they can't call them Bible thumpers and then accuse them of not having read the Bible. Reading the Bible is a little bit more complicated than reading the Mueller report. But no, you're just too stupid. And these are our intellectual and moral betters. They're not willing to let go of this story yet. For one very simple reason. They got nothing else. They really, literally have nothing else. I mean, if you were a Democrat, would you feel comfortable with that field? Would you think, well, all the American people have to do is get a look at this field of candidates and listen to them, and then we will complete... No, Democrats are shuddering in fear that they that people will hear their candidates. Before they get a nominee, they don't want anybody listening to the Democrats outside of the Democratic Party. That's why they're having the next debate on CNN. They don't want anybody to watch. It'll make it easier to try and walk back some of the insanity they're trying, all of the insanity they're trying to sell to win the nomination of the Democratic Party. So, yeah, I just found that very interesting that the spin is we're too stupid. We didn't pay attention to it. The media failed because they didn't dumb it down enough and didn't repeat it enough. And that's really the only reason that there aren't people with pitchforks and torches outside of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue right now. Not sure how that's going to work. The Democrats' election strategy at this point is you're racist, now vote for me. And also you're an idiot, now vote for me. Not super effective, I don't think. Time will tell. Lastly, I just want to play this clip really quickly. You might have heard creeping through all the Mueller spin yesterday, the story of a sweet, sweet, nourishing 17-year-old American citizen who was detained by ICE at the southern border and held in detention for 23 days. And this injustice cannot stand. It is an outrage. How dare this have happened? This is a result, of course, of Donald Trump's America and his racism and xenophobia and whatever ism or phobia you want to throw on there as well. Well, yesterday up on Capitol Hill, there was a hearing featuring Brian Hastings. He is the chief of law enforcement operations for the Customs and Border Patrol. Ted Lieu, Democrat from California, I told you yesterday or the day before, not a particularly bright man, asked Brian Hastings about this. He's very upset. All Democrats are very upset at this affront to this 17-year-old American's liberty and citizenship being held. He only did it because he's Hispanic, you racists. Listen to this very short exchange where Brian Hastings lays out the facts of the case, and I guarantee you, unless you heard this testimony, which you likely didn't, because why would anybody watch this hearing, you have not heard this before. Turns out there's a very, very good reason why this kid was detained for 23 days, and it's all his fault. Not making it up. Here you go.
Recently, it was reported that an 18-year-old U.S. citizen was detained by border officials, Francisco Oren Galicia, During 23 days, he was in the custody of U.S. Customs Border Patrol. He was not allowed to shower. He also said he lost 26 pounds during his time in detention. He also said he slept on the floor, sometimes with aluminum foil blankets. Some had to sleep in the bathroom area. If we could get information on why this U.S. citizen was detained, that'd be helpful.
Yes, sir, and I can give you some preliminary. The individual came through the Falfurrias checkpoint, and he came through with the other illegal aliens. The individual claimed to be a Mexican national who was born in Reynoso, Mexico. Throughout the process and while he was with Border Patrol, he claimed to be a national, a citizen of Mexico with no immigration documents to be in or remain in the U.S. Upon further investigation, we also found that he had a border crossing card. And that border crossing card he had used 53 times to cross the border into the U.S., which further gives us further indication that he was not a U.S. citizen. He had no time in Border Patrol custody. Did he say that he was a U.S. citizen?
Thank you.
He lied, or whatever. Maybe he's not a U.S. citizen. Who knows? The story hasn't exactly been fully vetted by the media. They just reported it because it was too good not to report. It was too good to fact check. But he heard him. At no time in custody did he say he was a U.S. citizen. He said he was a citizen of Mexico. He had a border crossing card that indicated that he was a citizen of Mexico, not a citizen of the United States. Have you heard any of that anywhere? Have you seen that audio or seen that video played anywhere? Probably not, because it blows up the narrative that ICE is reckless and racist and just detaining anybody, including Americans, just because they happen to be Hispanic crossing the southern border. He was caught with a whole bunch of illegal aliens. Weird how, when you look into these things, beyond the headlines and beyond the lazy reporting and even lazier punditry that goes along with it, you find some interesting little factoids. There was a time when journalists kind of would have done this work, I'd imagine, or else their reputations, before they really had the wheels come off, would have been for naught. But it's not anymore. It's Twitter journalism. Somebody tweeted it must be true. Somebody said it. I heard it. He said it. I'm not going to verify anything. They dropped the but verify part from their job, that for Ronald Reagan's trust but verify. It's just trust. If it's anti-Republican, if it's anti-Trump, just trust, run with it. Don't worry. If it turns out to be a hoax, we'll have moved on to something else by then. Maybe we'll issue a correction. It doesn't matter. As long as the lie gets out there, as long as the narrative is advanced, who really gives a damn about any of it? I do. You do. Thank God the internet exists, because we wouldn't know this otherwise. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today before we get to the interview with Charlie Hurt from the Washington Times and Fox News about his new book, Winning. You'll hear all about that. It's a good book. So it was a fun interview, too. He has a tie to Detroit, so we get into Detroit a little bit. And his first trip into Detroit happened to be on Devil's Night. It's a good, good time, good interview. Have a great weekend. Email me, Derek@DailyCaller.com. And otherwise, I'll be back here on Monday. I hope you will, too, and you'll continue to tell friends. See you then.
All righty. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it, the Daily Caller podcast for Friday, the Friday video edition. If you're listening to the audio version, you're getting this halfway through and you're wondering why I'm yelling at you. If you're just watching the video, you're seeing me sweat. So there you go. Congratulations. It is Friday, and as we always do, we drag somebody from their life into ours to pick their brains, find out what they're up to, and their latest projects. And this week is no different. We're joined by Charlie Hurt. He is opinion editor at the Washington Times and a Fox News contributor, as well as, and perhaps most importantly, especially this week, author of the book, Still Winning, Why America Went All In on Donald Trump and Why We Must Do It Again. Welcome to the show, Charlie.
Great to be with you, Derek. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you coming in. So first off, I want to talk a little bit about your background, because everybody knows you from Fox News. Everybody knows you from the Washington Times. But we've been talking. We both have a Detroit connection. I grew up there and escaped in a hot air balloon in 2001.
You're lucky you didn't get shot out of the sky.
We went really high, really fast, yeah. But we took some shrapnel. And you actually started off your journalistic career at the Detroit News.
Yeah, my first full-time job, I'd worked intern, you know, summers and internships before that. But my first full-time real job was in 1995, I think. Is that possible? Yeah. As a strike breaker. It wasn't my picket line, so I didn't care. But I loved crossing the picket line every day. It was really invigorating. It was better than a cup of coffee.
That strike went on for a very long time.
Longest, I think, in history, I think. They finally settled it long after I left. But back then, it was great because I grew up in a small tobacco town in rural Virginia. And, I wanted to, get a job working at a big city. I wanted to see dead bodies.
And I came to Detroit.
And I came to the right place. And I remember, this is back before you have the internet with the iPhone that tells you where to go.
Yeah.
And so I basically thought that Chicago was Detroit. And so it wasn't until I kind of got near there and I opened up the map that I realized it actually
it's 5 hours away.
Yeah, exactly. Detroit's over here on the right. And so I took off up 75 and I was in bought my mother's old Chevy Caprice Classic, which would later get stolen off
in
the
Detroit?
Street in Detroit. Shocking. And along with all my bluegrass tapes and my hunting jacket. And I've always wondered, and I had a bunch of shotgun shells, and I've always wondered how many people were injured by the shotgun shells that I bought at Walmart down in rural Virginia. But anyway, so coming up 75, and, I come from a town where you have three exit ramps, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, you got to take the first, maybe the second exit ramp, right? And so I take it.
Wow, was the straw still sticking out from behind your collar when you fell off the turnip truck?
And I had the crap on top of the car. I look like Jed Clampett. And I come up there, and it was – you'll appreciate this, Derek. It was Devil's Night.
The first. So you could see it off in the city off in the distance as it glowed with fire.
I take that first exit, and I take like – I then wind up on surface streets past like 50 more exits before I get to the Detroit News. And I look around and everything is on fire. Yeah. Fire trucks are flying up and down the street. Houses are on fire. Cop cars are turned over. They're on fire. Yeah. And all I can think about is, oh my God, I've died and gone to heaven. This is the greatest place on earth. And it really was.
There's never a dull moment. One thing people might not know about Detroit is Devil's Night. It's not called Devil's Night ever. They try to call it. I think it's Angel's Night.
Yeah, it's politically incorrect now.
Yes. But it's the night before Halloween, and people took the opportunity to burn the cracked houses down in their neighborhood because the police there were too many of them.
Yeah.
So they said, well, we'll go set this place on fire, and then they won't be able to smoke their crack in it anymore.
And it was born out of a very good,
It was born out of frustration of good people, not out of any malice.
But it also kind of jumped the tracks, and it became an opportunity to do all kinds of things.
And there probably weren't many people smoking crack. I've come across cars on fire in the middle of the road on Devil's Night. I doubt they were crack dens.
Right. And also, I don't know that it helps to burn down the crack house when the chairman of the school board walks out with his trusty 9mm and just unloads a clip straight up in the air. I'm not thinking that is what is the best thing for Devil's
Night. Let's just say that 1984, I believe Detroit pioneered the rioting as celebration with the Tigers World Series victory.
Right.
I personally have never been so happy that I wanted to overturn a car and set it on fire. But I feel like I lost out.
You just haven't lived.
That's true. That's true. I haven't smoked crack much either. All right. So then you worm your way through your career. You escape Detroit as well. It's still a great place to visit. Great pizza. Mm. People don't think of Detroit as a pizza city, but it is.
Wonderful pizza and wonderful. Remember the Coney Dogs, the Coney Islands?
Lafayette Island and American Coney Island right next to each
other. Which were you?
A Lafayette.
I just heard today, and I don't know if this is entirely true, but Charlie LaDuff is serving hot dogs at American Lafayette, at American Coney Dog.
I did not know that. I know that the Coney Dog was invented in Detroit, though.
Oh, yeah.
That's why those two families, they hate each other, set up the shop there.
Well, yeah, there's been a truce because I think they're both owned by the same people now.
Maybe.
But Detroit
is coming back to life, though. That's the difference.
But I remember, back when we were there, when I was there, when you were there, downtown was remarkably safe because there was nothing to steal.
Well, there was nobody there. And at 6 o'clock, everything was closed.
You could walk down the down the street with like $100 hanging out of your pocket and nobody, because there's nobody left. And literally, you'd look up in the sky and you'd see pheasants flying from the 30th floor of one vacant building to the 30th floor of the vacant building across
the... Better than bodies trying to.
Yes, true.
No, I've been to the State Theater downtown. I don't know why we're going all to Detroit. But you'd park on one particular street next to this beautiful... That's the thing, people... It's beautiful buildings. They're abandoned.
Yeah.
And beer bottles would be raining down. Like, it was like dodging aerial bombings. It felt like I was in Dresden on a small scale to try and get out of there. I don't think they were trying to hit you. They were just trying to scare the hell out of you. But they did it.
Yeah. They know how to have fun in Detroit.
But they're winning now. And yes. America is still winning.
Still winning.
I brought this to why I get paid.
That's good.
Big
that's
bucks,
talented.
Really. Still winning, why America went all in on Donald Trump and why we must do it again. First of all, you were one of the few people from the beginning to believe that Trump could win. I was a very late adapter. I didn't think he would do it. I believed the polls. Why? What was it that you saw in Donald Trump early in 2015 or late in 2015, early 2016, that made you think he could do it?
I think a lot of it has to do with just the fact that I was had been in Washington for, 15 years at that point and had covered, I've covered Democrats and Republicans. And I'm more or less, I'm far more conservative than I am liberal, unlike most of the people in the news profession. And
wait a second.
But I work very hard to sort of check myself because I wanted to write. And I think I did a fairly good job of it, of keeping my biases out of my coverage of, say, John Edwards or John Kerry or any of these, Democrats and Republicans for that matter. If anything, I think I was probably harder on Republicans because I would see that I knew how unconservative they were.
Yeah, you wanted more from them.
Yeah.
Or you knew they were lying.
Yeah, exactly.
Even though you couldn't say it.
Exactly. And after, years of that, I think I shared the frustration of regular people all over the country who were just, they were tired of Democrats and they were tired of Republicans. And when Trump came out, the first people he went after were Republicans. And he did it in a way that it wasn't some sort of inter-family fight.
No, he wasn't doing Marcus of Queensberry rules saying, no, I disagree with you, sir.
It was vicious. And it really did. It captured, I think, the intense frustration that so many people felt about, especially it had been betrayed by Republicans who claimed to be conservative. And of course, Trump didn't run as some, great principled conservative.
No.
I think there's a lot of stuff. I think he's advanced a lot of the conservative cause. It was just that incredible pent up frustration. And it was and then also another thing. All politicians in Washington, they talk the same way and use the same language.
Mm-hmm.
And Donald Trump came out and he was not talking the same language. He used different words.
I've heard of presidents swearing before, never from the stage as a candidate.
Yeah.
I appreciated that because I think like most people, you sit around and you have those conversations with your friends where the politicians are blowing smoke up your ass.
Yeah.
And you're worried about getting colon cancer. Yeah. There's so much smoke up there. And you just say, why can't they just say this? And it's the way you talk to your buddy in a bar.
Right.
And Donald Trump did that.
He really did. And unlike, say, Joe Biden, who, people try to compare the two. No, Joe Biden says stuff that's just stupid and is just like moronic. Donald Trump says stuff that you're not supposed to say.
Right.
But as you say, it's exactly what, you were hanging out with the guy that's working on your car and had a couple of beers the night before. And it's exactly what he said. It's a very good point, usually. It's just not the way politicians talk around here, and I don't like the cussing. I don't think that in the public. I don't think we need that, but I'd rather have that and have somebody who is a bull in the china shop than not have, than have the pristine language and not have the guy who's pissed off and turning over the tables in the whatever it's called market.
He was such a shock to the system. Do you think he could have won as an independent? Because he wasn't really a Republican until right before the most recent years.
What an interesting
Ross
question.
Ross Perot got at 19%. He might have won in 92 had he not taken that hiatus with they're trying to ruin my daughter's wedding freak out that he had. Do you think he could have split the pie three ways so that he ended up with enough winning?
I mean, clearly he stole so many voters from the Democratic side and then also sewed up the independent voters. But I also wonder, I do think that a lot of Republicans went with him because they felt like they had to.
Mm.
running as an independent, unfortunately, in this country is so impossible. But it's an interesting question. If anybody could have done it, it would have been him.
I admit I voted for him. I came to the realization that I just wanted to – I live in Maryland, so it wasn't like my vote was going to be the difference right. maker. I wanted to say to my children that I voted against Hillary, that yeah. I didn't – and I voted for the person with the best shot against Hillary, that I took the biggest stand I could as a person in Maryland. But election night comes. The votes start coming in. The media starts – panicking, and things go Trump's way. Did that forever change politics, or is it unique to Donald Trump?
I think I think some of it is unique to Donald Trump because of his strange mix of being a marketer, he's very good at he has that feral instinct for people's weaknesses and that utter fearlessness for going after them. That said, I pray that, and I've been very frustrated with Republicans who have been so slow to look at this guy and say, okay, we can learn something from him. And Republicans can learn something, not the least of which is not to be so scared of everything.
Right.
I mean, I've never, in all of my time covering politicians, I've never known a politician who is so willing to spend political capital in order to get something done. Most politicians, the only political capital they'll ever spend is to get themselves reelected.
Or when it's a sure thing, they'll hop on the train. Yeah. That's what's so frustrating about the first 2 years of the Trump administration when they had majorities in both houses. It was a tougher haul in the Senate because of the filibuster. But for all the grousing of the Republican establishment, if they'd have put damn near anything in front of Donald Trump, he likely would have not only signed it, he would have sold it on their behalf.
Absolutely.
And they didn't. They had the opportunity to push for, fight for the things they've said they've always wanted. It goes back to what you said about listening to these people talk in the campaign trail, knowing that they're full of it.
Yeah.
And they didn't. They dropped that ball. Do you think that the 2018 loss is more of a reflection on Trump as the media portrays it, or more of a reflection on the Republicans?
I think I think without a doubt, if Republicans had – I mean, just take the health care, the repeal and replace. And then suddenly when it came time – when they caught the car and they could do it, they didn't have any intention of actually doing it. They've been lying to us for 7 years.
They expected Hillary to be president, so it was easy to say we'll get rid of it.
Right. In Republicans' defense, I will say this, that Democrats did a very crafty job of making the first 2 years all about Russia and all this total, utter, complete nonsense. Republicans shouldn't have gone along with it, and they should have fought it more spiritedly. But I do think you're exactly right that Republicans could have gotten whatever they wanted through, and Donald Trump would have been perfectly happy with it. And the fear now is, of course, I don't put it past Donald Trump to work with Democrats if he sees an opportunity.
Right. I still think he would. He still says nice things about Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah.
Defends her as not being a racist. Nobody believes Nancy Pelosi's a racist, but when she's out there saying,
did she say that about him?
Why don't you just let it go instead of addressing it? But one of the things that I don't think President Trump gets enough credit for, and you go into in Still Winning, there are a lot of successes. Most of them, the thing that gets talked about the most are the tax cuts and the economy. But Anwar, you write about in your book.
Yeah.
It was a huge fight my whole life. It was impossible. They tried and tried and tried, allegedly, and couldn't get drilling in a tiny section of a giant part of an abandoned area of Alaska. Yeah. It seems absurd. He seemed to do it with no sweat, and it was not even really met with much cheering in this country.
And it almost kind of came as a surprise to him. It wasn't until he was on the phone with a friend of his in the oil business who was just flabbergasted, said, I can't believe you got this Anwar thing. And Trump was like, yeah, I guess we'll put it in there. And he's like, no, this is a really big deal, and explained to him what a big deal it was. And so then when he got off the phone with that guy, he called up whoever, I think it was Reince Priebus at the time, and said, well, I want to keep Anwar in there. And so it got there. And remember when Ted Stevens used to come to the floor wearing his Incredible Hulk tie?
Yes.
And he would go on a rage. And it would go on, and they would fight for weeks and weeks and weeks. And every time.
They'd get close.
They would get
there. And they would, no,
it'd be one vote away, and then boom.
The moose. The noble moose. We couldn't possibly. The moose. why, how was he able to get it? I guess maybe even a better question was, why wasn't anybody else able to get it if he was able to get it sort of as an afterthought?
I think because it's, you know, all these people around here, they're so hidebound. They have their way of doing things. They have their sort of lines of demarcation where they fight over. And this is a guy, you know, again, not a doctrinaire conservative, but he just wants to fix things. And he wants like a common sense solution to things. And so he looks at it in a completely new way. And when he says things that that sound stupid to people around here, it's not that it's stupid. It's just that he's trying to ask all the questions and look at it in a completely fresh way. And I'd take that any day over over the, you know, just beating your head against the wall, doing the same sort of things. But one thing that I think is really important about that is that he is, you know, it reveals just how terrible things have gotten for conservatives in this country, that what we're talking about is just simply having a border on the South.
Or, well, they all used to talk about that until Donald Trump got elected.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to know what you think, because you've been around him, you've been on the train, you've met President, I assume you've interviewed him several times. Part of, I remember the old story of the semi-trailer that hits the bridge because it's too tall. And everybody's sitting around, all the adults scratching their head, kicking sand, going, geez, how do we get this out of there? We don't know how to do it. And along comes this kid who just says, why don't you deflate the tires? Yeah. Donald Trump, in many ways, and maybe I'm wrong, reminds me of that in the best way possible in government. He's not from the political world. He's not worried not just about political speech and political correct speech, but how things are done, who gets the credit. He's that kid who kind of comes along and sees what all the smart people missed. Right.
And you know, early on in the campaign, you know, campaigns have, you know, they have their surrogates, you know, that are all around who are working on behalf of the candidate. And they do things like go on TV and argue in favor of their candidate during the election. And one of the things that they send out, quote unquote, campaigns send out things called talking points.
Yeah.
So that all the surrogates know the talking points to use when they go out. Well, early in the Trump campaign, I never have gotten talking points and I wouldn't know what to do with them if I saw them. But I had friends who were working for Trump, the Trump campaign, once it became sort of a more normal campaign. And their talking points always began the same way. The first talking point was, Trump is a builder. The second talking point was, Trump builds buildings. And all these people in Washington would look at this and they'd look at these are not talking points. This is idiotic. I need to know about your 14-point plan. About that. And everyone would get upset. And of course, I was looking at, that's brilliant. That's why he won, is because Trump was like, I'm a builder. I build buildings. I can. And you get the impression, this is a guy who can fix things. And you know, people around here, you know, even people who were well-intentioned and wanted him to win, even they didn't understand the beauty of that.
What is it about Donald Trump that I grew up, my father drove a forklift for General Motors, Fisher Body in Livonia, Michigan.
Nice.
30 years. He's been retired for longer than he worked. He relates, Donald Trump relates to my father, my father can relate to Donald Trump. They have literally nothing in common. My father has flown maybe 3 or 4 times in his life, hates it. Donald Trump has planes. Right. Donald Trump probably hasn't made a sandwich for himself in quite some time, whereas my dad will make a sandwich for himself when he's hungry. Yet people like my dad, blue-collar workers, look at someone like that and go, he gets me. There's realistically, just on paper, there's no way in the world a billionaire from Manhattan gets somebody from Oklahoma who works on a farm. Yet the people who work in the farm in Oklahoma or the factory in Wisconsin or wherever, they feel like he gets them, and in many ways, he does. Where does that come from?
I think it comes from when he was growing up, and his dad was a developer, and he would go and work, you know, check out these construction sites, and he realized that the smartest people that he would encounter in a given day were these guys that were working on the construction site, and he would talk to them, and he would listen to them, and I think that's where he learned kind of how to talk. I know I worked construction, all my years growing up, and, absolutely to this day, the smartest people I ever met were guys that I worked with, foremen, or not even foremen, people that weren't foremen, but just really smart people who knew how to.
A guy with a hammer, a box of nails, and a ruler can build a building. I did roofing, and the guys, you look at a problem and you think, the hell is this going to, how are we going to deal with this? And they knew exactly how, they figured out within 10 minutes how to deal with it.
Absolutely. And it's those kinds of people that I think Donald Trump very much informed his way of relating to people and solving problems and figuring things out. And he's never lost it. And he has kept those people in mind clearly, because, you know, when he first came along, I don't care about Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. I care about the people he speaks for. And man, he was speaking the exact same language that I hear from my neighbors and the those people that I grew up with back home.
In many ways, the Democrats used to speak for those people. They used to brag, pride about speaking for those people. Donald Trump benefited a lot from having the best thing Donald Trump has ever had going for him is his opponents.
This is really true.
No matter what he does, if the other side, all you've got to do is sound sane.
Yeah.
For 5 minutes, and they seem incapable of doing that.
Totally incapable.
When you get to the second half of your subtitle and why we must do it again, running as an incumbent is wildly different than running as an outsider. He's not the outsider anymore. He's in the House. How does that play? How does that impact his strategy in re-election?
Well, the first thing is the thing you just mentioned. The guy has been lucky in his opponents, and I look across the aisle and I don't know who it is that they side with that they can.
The clown car conga line that's going on over there. My God.
But you're exactly right. It is so much harder. You know, he was so good as the renegade, crashing the gates. But I have to say that, you know, if there is anybody that might be able to sort of thread that needle, I would put my faith in Trump over some regular, normal politician. But the 2016 election was a more issue-oriented election than any election I've ever covered. It came down to the issues. And if that happens again, and it was mainly because you had two very polarizing candidates running against each other. Mm. And if that's the issue here, if it comes down to the issues, Donald Trump is going to win in a walk, because the issues, I mean, again, you know, live birth abortion,
open borders, open health borders, care for illegals. I mean,
all that stuff is just insane.
These are things you can't walk back either. You can't hedge your bets and say, well, I didn't really mean that. They were unambiguous.
And if you actually put it to a vote among just regular mainstream Democrat voters, they wouldn't support any of that stuff.
But in the Democratic primary, you can win with 30% of the vote. Yeah. So that's all they need to.
They're screwing themselves so badly right now. And then, like you say, you can't walk the stuff back. You can't put that stuff back in the tube.
So Donald Trump's prospects for 2018, why must we do it again? Is it that the alternative is so bad?
It's the brand of nonsense that these Democrats are peddling right now is so incredibly dangerous and anti-American and anti-freedom.
Do they mean it, do you think?
Who knows? Do they mean anything?
Cory Booker says, I just don't believe.
I don't either. I don't either. And Kamala Harris, you know,
she wants to have a serious conversation about that. That's a bad answer for everything.
Before she was running for president, I found her a remarkably appealing person. But the way she talks and I love the fact that she was a prosecutor. She's running away from all of that. And it's like,
it really is a bizarre thing to watch a field renounce everything that they've done. Joe Biden's 40-year Senate career is now, look, I didn't mean that. I'm sorry we did that. We shouldn't have done this.
Yeah.
They're all doing that.
Yeah.
I don't know how you win with that.
You can't. And you, especially if you look at that and you compare it to Trump style, which is just you embrace everything and you go full throttle ahead. And it may not always be the smoothest way to get there, but you get there.
Donald Trump's record is remarkably conservative.
Yeah.
The media hates him for that, and many conservatives, in air quotes, hate him for that. One thing that drove me nuts about the Never Trumpers is what we talked about before. Like, if you're going to be angry at somebody, they were angry that Donald Trump was president, more so than that he was doing anything.
Right.
If they'd have pushed the House and Senate to do things that they claimed their whole lives they wanted, they could have gotten so much of what they wanted getting done. Going forward, does Donald Trump need need them? He won the first time, but Democrats are certainly more energized now than anybody was excited about Hillary.
Sure. It would be good. It's best for everyone involved if those Never Trumpers get over their stuff and unify behind this guy. But and this is a knock on both sides in Washington. Washington is built around these calcified positions, and weirdly there's no benefit if a Democrat is running on being pro-abortion. There's a problem that needs to be solved. There's no benefit in that Democrat ever solving that problem, mm-hmm. because as long as the problem exists, then they keep running on it and then keep raising money on it.
That's why Democrats did nothing about immigration, even though they cared deeply about it when they had a filibuster-proof majority.
And you could say the same about Republicans.
Yeah.
And there are all kinds of issues on both sides where they do that. And to me, that's the intractable mess in Washington. That's why nothing ever gets done. And that's why I just think that true conservatives ought to line up with Trump, because he is willing to blow the place up and just say, no, we're going to actually fix that and we'll recalibrate all of our fights after we fix
it. But they make so much money the way it is. They don't want it blown up.
Yeah, but I think they make less money now than they were when they were in charge of everything.
Let me ask you this, Charlie. Donald Trump's best asset is himself and his opponents. Is Donald Trump's worst enemy himself?
I can see why people would say that, but at the end of the day, I think not. And it's for this reason, he's a total package. If he were a more politic guy, if he were more careful, if he were, less always straining for a fight, I don't think he'd be the kind of person who would be willing to tear up the China shop the way he does. And so I hear people make that argument all the time, and I just kind of shrug my shoulders and think, I take the good with the bad. And it's not like his supporters support him blindly. Like, they don't know some of the things that he does that are wrong. Like I thought that tweet about send them all back. I thought that was completely foolish, idiotic, and all that. But that's not the point. The point is that his supporters support him despite all of those things. They're willing to take on all of the bad things because they like the good things.
Have you ever seen anything local or statewide and the vitriol that is spilled? Like, everybody had dislikes the figurehead, the president.
Yeah.
Barack Obama was not a loved person on the right. Donald Trump is reviled by the left. But it didn't really spill down to Trump or to Obama supporters.
Oh, I know.
Trump's.
I know.
If you wear a red hat, that it just, a St. Louis Cardinals hat, somebody sees you from behind, there's a 20% possibility they're going to throw something at you.
No, it's incredible. No, the level of vitriol has reached something that we've never seen before, where you have people. You really do. That venom is directed not at Trump. When they call Trump a racist, they're not calling Trump a racist. They're calling all of his supporters racist. Mm. And that's the thing that really pisses me off more than anything. And you take that Charlottesville. I have a whole chapter about the Charlottesville debacle where, people absolutely lie about what he
said. Still to this day.
Still lying.
Journalists.
About what he said. Total journalists lying about what he said. And the thing that I find so offensive about it, again, Donald Trump's a big guy. He can take care of himself. They're not calling Donald Trump a racist. They're calling all my neighbors a racist.
Well, their election strategy at this point seems to be, you're a racist, now vote for me.
Right.
Like, I'm not really – it looks like
you're not a
bumper
racist,
sticker,
but
I don't know where it works. Charlie Hurt, as we wrap it up, we've got a couple of things, but I just want to ask you, what do you want the takeaway to be from somebody who sits down this weekend and reads Still Winning?
I wrote the book with the intention of making it a stripped-down argument where you take away the style, you take away all the – you take away all the politics. And it's just the argument that you can make to your sister-in-law who didn't vote for Trump, doesn't like Donald Trump, finds him brash and boorish and insulting. And so that you can make that argument to her and – that might possibly convince her that, oh, I see now why people like this guy. And also, I realize you're not a racist, by the way.
And I don't understand that strategy. Just look at
you do. It's because it's so effing effective. Well,
I wrote my book about how the left appeals to emotion to override logic. If you get people angry or afraid, you can get them to almost do anything.
Oh, yeah.
History has shown that. And that's where the left
lives. Just ask my children.
I've got to ask you, I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't pick your brain about the Democratic field. And who you see. Joe Biden is the presumptive nominee, but he seems to be doing everything he possibly can to lose it.
Yeah, I don't see how Joe Biden survives it. But I will say this. At the end of the race, I think Democrats are going to freak out because what they care about more than anything else is their hatred for Donald Trump. And they're going to run off in socialist la-la land with all these people. And then they're going to get to the end and they're going to do what Democrats did in 2004, Republicans did in 2012, which is they say, oh, crap, we have to win this thing. We just have to beat him. That's all that matters. And they're going to look around for the most moderate, acceptable voice they can find.
Who is that?
That's the problem. I think Biden will be in an insane asylum by then. And it might be the Pete Buttigieg. It might be, I don't know.
Beto.
No, honestly.
I remember where McCain was in 2008.
I wouldn't put it back, but I don't think Beto is going to fit that bill because he said some insane, we need to tear down the walls we've got. So he's kind of said some really idiotic things as well.
But the only real moderates-ish in the field, someone like Hickenlooper, who's saying, hey, don't embrace this socialism. And he's polling at a rounding error.
But I think that at the end of the day, it's like the in 2004, you know, I dated Dean, married Carrie, bumper sticker. They all, you know, they want to be seen as, oh, I loved him and I slept with him. But at the end of the day, they're like, we got to beat this guy. So let's go with it. And of course, it never works because you wind up picking somebody who is a completely
unenthused.
Right.
And like a Mitt Romney. Perfectly nice guy.
Mitt Romney.
I'd want Mitt Romney to babysit my kids while we went out for dinner and a movie, but I wouldn't follow him to the mall, let alone into battle.
And the same with John Kerry, and it's why both of them lost.
The book Still Winning, Why America Went All In on Donald Trump and Why It Must Do It Again. The man is Charlie Hurt. We've got copies here that you're going to sign for us.
Yes, indeed.
Before we let you go.
Oh, yeah, I have to.
You got to draw two names. I'm sorry the font is so small. I don't have my glasses, so I can't help you with that, but...
How do I know that this is not rigged? See, I can see that name right there.
Have you been bribed? Do you know that person?
Look away. What are you talking? Okay, you want me to look away?
Do whatever you want. Nobody believes that you're rigging this.
Okay.
First one.
E.E. Segura.
There you go. E.E. Segura. Congratulations. I'll be emailing you later. And
John Dominic.
John Dominic, a guy with two first names. All right, Charlie Hurt, congratulations to you guys. You'll get a chance, not next week, but the week after, to win a signed copy of this. Thanks for coming in, Charlie.
It's always fascinating to talk to you. Enjoyed it, Derek.
I bestow upon you honorary Detroiter status.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You're not a native.
No, but you know, it's really funny how particular people in Detroit are about that. They're like, where did you live? Well, that's not Detroit.
I know, but only in Detroit does that matter. Because if you're talking to somebody in a bar in Washington, D.C., and you say, oh, I'm from Redford Township, they'll go, what the hell is that?
So you
just say Detroit.
Unless you happen, it turns out to be that the person is from Detroit, which happens so often.
Because there were no jobs there. When I graduated college, I was like, what do I do here? I don't know what I do here. So I got in my hot air balloon. Thanks for coming in,
Thank
Charlie.
You, really
Thanks good. For listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Have a great weekend. We'll be back here with another program on Monday. See you then.
I'm begging the American people to pay attention to what is going on.